174. This bill, you will remember, lady and gentlemen, that it was before us, I don't know, a month ago. And thank you. Well, hey, it was. It was a month ago. Yeah, we're moving right along, aren't we? And since then, we had asked through a letter that Jim sent to the Department of Administrative Services, we asked the department if they would please respond to some questions relative to the vendor collective administrative fee. And so in front of you, you have the response from Lori Warner, along with a legal size paper document that talks about the fee log and what fees have been increased and decreased. And Mike, I see you in the audience. Do you know anything about the fee log itself? Okay, you're just here because the bill pertains to the print shop, correct? Okay. Anyway, so this gives us some other information about fees that have been charged or increased, and Jim, can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yes, sir. After our last meeting, I was directed to formulate some questions and send to DAS in regard to the fees that might be established. DAS has a form 333, and I requested, and this is the result on the legal size paper, any fee increases, decreases, or new fees, and they've attached that for us. And then there were questions pertaining more directly to the bill that we have before us. The question number one, it says, has notice been sent to the same vendors advising them that the VCAF would not be implemented? If it has, please provide copy for the committee. The response was that P&D has not yet formally notified vendors that we do not intend to implement the VCAF in 0507. And also asked if they planned on reprinting the page that discussed the fee. And they indicated that they would not be reprinting, that the price list or estimates at a point in time, and it's only intended as a guidance. And we also asked if they charge a fee to bid on a contract for the state of Oregon or required to pay a fee as a result of obtaining or servicing a contract with the state of Oregon. They indicated that there were no bidder is charged a fee to bid on a contract with the state of Oregon, and the bid proposal documents are available to all registered bidders in Oregon Procurement Information Network. And let's see. And then the last two pertain to Form 333, which I indicated you already have the results on the legal size paper.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I did meet briefly with Director of Fish and Wildlife, Lindsay Ball, regarding a fee that was pending. Regarding developmental fisheries, I wanted to know what developmental fisheries were. I that was something I did not understand, and he assured me that that was moving into new areas of regulation. I guess my question, when we're doing that, is there some indication that the Form 333, which is to announce the intention to seek a fee or to establish a fee or to implement some kind of a fee change, does that form contemplate that there will be a future action by the legislature, or is it based upon an action that was taken by the legislature that should be part of the public hearings process for administrative rule establishment, or is this the developmental fisheries, for instance, is that just something they're contemplating to implement a fee without any legislative oversight in the interim? Do we know that?
I can only give you exactly what I perceived the form to mean, and that was to notify DAS of any new fee, increase fee, decrease fee,
not based upon any legislative action necessarily.
The impression I had was it was to notify DAS so that they can look to see if it does require legislative action or not.
I see. The other fee that I found kind of interesting in the process, I think I mentioned it the other day.
I forgot to look that one up.
Just mention it again, and that is the remote dispensing licensing fee, machine licensing fee for the Department of the Board of Pharmacy. That could be very interesting for the remote fees, remote dispensing of issues which are pharmaceutical kinds of things. I don't know whether I've got here a prescription in my pocket. Do I slip that prescription in and then have it dispense whatever it...
And the pills pop out?
I guess. Lots of feel better machines on each corner or something. I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, those are the questions that I had, and I didn't follow up with the... Director of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mike, would you go ahead and come up for a second, please? I just have a question I want to ask you, and if you would go ahead this is pertinent to the. Did you get a copy of the letter that Ms. Warner sent back to Director Warner sent back to us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Freeze, Deputy State Chief Information Officer. No, I do not have a copy of that.
Okay, I apologize then if I'm taking you by surprise, and if this does and you don't know the answer, we'll figure it out. But what I was wondering is it the question had been asked about the vendor collected administrative fee, and it was relayed to us by Director Warner that printing and distribution has not yet formally notified vendors that you do not intend to implement a VCAF in 0507. Will you be notifying the vendors that you don't intend to implement that fee?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And if I might add to that, the issue of clarification or reprinting the one page of the price list of goods and services instructions, the language in that piece is a little bit ambiguous, but it was not meant to convey that we intended to implement a VCAF, but rather that we would actually implement an administrative fee that agencies would pay. So we have no intention of implementing a VCAF, and we intend to formally notify the vending community of that for printing.
Okay. Do you have an idea as to when that will go out?
We can do that very shortly. It may already have been done, in fact.
Okay. I'm just wondering if you could go ahead and follow up on that. I realize that you don't take directions from us, I mean, as far as your day-to-day work, but I'm just wondering if you could go ahead and do that, because that way the vending community knows that there's not going to be a fee instituted for the 0507 biennium, and they would know that, of course, before before it's going to get started, before the biennium starts. Yes, Representative Butler.
I have an ongoing concern. I've had Mike come before us in Ways and Means before, and I thought in the Ways and Means process we were addressing the issues of the financial needs of the printer and other of the Department of Administrative Services various functions. Are we not doing a good job in the Ways and Means process, Mike, that we have to come back and assess interim fees to third parties in order to stay alive, or are we? What's the reason? Again, I've just visited briefly with Representative Dingfelder, and the concern that I've got is, why do we have to be coming back to address this when it really is a Ways and Means issue, which should have been addressed down the Ways and Means process, as opposed to agencies charging one another for fear that they're not going to have enough to get along.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I believe, in fact, that it was, or they are addressed through the Ways and Means process. This is a discrete little function. It's a very small function, and the funding strategy for it, the VCAF strategy that was proposed last biennium, is just one of several approaches that we could take to fund that function. What we have determined that we're going to do instead is to fund that by agencies paying for that service. The agencies that benefit from the service would pay for it. So it's instead of having a vendor-collected administrative fee, we have basically an agency-collected administrative fee.
Mr. Chair, I have a meeting later this afternoon with Director Warner, and that's a question that I will ask her. If the overall administrative fees that we charge for the Department of Administrative Services is going to be sufficient to cover these kinds of things, or do we need to continue to try and assess? And this wasn't, Mr. Chair, I don't want to allow this to be characterized as just a fee to be charged from one state agency to another. This was actually being charged to the printer company, who had a bid outstanding on it already. And there was no convincing testimony presented before the committee to indicate that that bid or that increase in the fee was to be passed on to anyone, but yet to be absorbed by the bidder. And I'm anxious about that happening in the future, and that's why I think we need to go ahead and make a definitive statement. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Butler. Okay, that answers my questions. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
Grover Simmons, you have a couple of comments you want to make?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Grover Simmons, representing the Printing Industry Association. At your last meeting on this bill a month ago, you instructed me to meet with Mike Pries, the state printer, and I did that. I met with Mike in his office, and we had a cordial meeting, and it was constructive. Right off, we agreed that there would not be this vendor administrative fee would not be implemented, and so that meant the meeting accomplished what I think you wanted us to do. But there were a couple of other things that we touched upon which were very constructive. It deals with protecting the printing industry, if you will. Some presses had been moved from the printing plant into the prison, and we were concerned as an industry as to how much printing was going to be done within the prison. And there is a contract between the prison industries, prison enterprises, and the state printer, probably the Department of Administrative Services, which addresses this whole thing. And we took a committee to the prison, and they said, well, we don't intend to use those presses for anything other than what they were used for when they were in the printing plant. Which is fine. That would be government agencies, state agencies. But the contract itself would allow them to print for the United States government, for the University of Oregon, for Oregon Health Sciences University, the lottery, the Indian tribes, nonprofit organizations, people who have a contract with human resources, etc. So that, of course, sent up real big red flags for the industry. Well, when we met at the prison, they said, we don't intend to use those presses other than what we described. So when I asked Mike about that, he said, we have no disagreement with repealing or rescinding that interagency agreement. So the meeting was truly constructive, and I just wanted to report back to the committee that we followed your instructions, and thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Grover. Are there any questions for Mr. Simmons? Representative Butler?
No question, Mr. Chair, just a statement. I do not believe that this bill addresses the use of print plant presses being relocated to the Department of Correction Facilities for the purpose of other printing. And I would encourage the prison corrections or prison industries and the corrections folks in the state of Oregon to do what they can to make sure that folks are well employed there, recognizing that that could create additional competition for the private sector, but I still believe that we have a constitutional mandate under Measure 17 to keep those folks busy. So I'd be very leery of trying to tell folks they can't stamp out license plates there, that they can't stamp out other print jobs on the printing plant presses that are being relocated to ODOC facilities.
Mr. Chairman, just an additional word on that. We did form a committee to monitor that situation at the prison. It turns out that they're all in agreement that that will be a limited function over there, and it's for the purpose of educating prisoners for eventual reemployment in the private sector. So we have quite a number of people from the industry stepping forward to participate in this ongoing committee. So what we thought was almost a completely negative situation has turned out to be pretty positive, and frankly, we're all looking forward to seeing it succeed.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Good. Well, thank you, Grover, for bringing that up. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, my hope is that they don't have folks working on plates there for. None of the counter centers would be assigned to that particular function.
Great mind's sake in the same track, Tom.
counterfeiters, not permitted or something.
Yeah, they probably are already trained, and we probably don't need to train them. Okay.
I appreciate the comment, though, that it is a potential win-win situation for the printing education and printing industry.
I too appreciate that, and I think that that's important. If there's not any other comments about 2474, my understanding is that there's also not any kind of amendments that need to go into this. Is that correct, Grover? And of course, Mike would just like to see the bill go away, I'm sure. But I do think that there is probably a reason to go ahead and make a definitive statement, as Representative Butler has pointed out. So what I'm going to do is, rather than opening a work session today on this representative, I'm going to ask staff to do the paperwork as far as final staff measure summary, and also to check with Legislative Fiscal and see if there is any kind of a fiscal on this bill, and then can we get that done by Thursday?
I'm not sure, sir.
Can we get it done by Tuesday, a week from today?
That would be my goal.
Okay. Then I'd like to have it rescheduled for a work session on Tuesday, 1 week from today, and we can go ahead and move the bill, because I think this does make a definitive statement with regards to vendor collected fees, and from a standpoint of the fees charged to agencies and how that's collected. That's something else that we'll be talking about a little bit later. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just again reiterate how important it is to have staff check with the Ways and Means process, the general government. I know that Senator Johnson, Representative Greg Smith, and others are working on, well, let's see, in general government. Senator Johnson chairs it, and Greg Smith and others are members of that Ways and Means Committee. I find this so shocking to find out that we go through the Ways and Means process, we develop a very intricate formula in the Department of Administrative Services to know how much each agency pays for what services, and then to come back and find out that it's not sufficient, that somehow we've got to have a vendor collected administrative fee imposed midterm on these kinds of things, and I think this is again. I'm anxious that if we set fees down in the Ways and Means after a very informative, instructive hearing process, and then come back midway through and find out that agencies are not able to work on that money, I'm not even sure how the accounting would be held for these kinds of things. So I'm anxious. I guess what I'm saying is that administratively collected these vendor collected administrative fees probably ought to be general fund, which would then have to be reappropriated, and that's not been done. That's not been done. What's happened is that this is a fee from an agency to an agency that somehow escapes that entire process, and I'm very anxious about that because of the implications that could mean to the overall internal audit process, as well as the appropriation process that we go through very meticulously in the state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Another question did before I close the public hearing. Another question did pop into my head, and Mike, you may or may not know the answer to this question, and that is with regards to. Not a vendor collected, but an agency, a charge to the agencies for using the services of the state printing and distribution. Is that charged on a specific rate, or is that on an overall assessment to all agencies?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Mike Fries, Deputy State Chief Information Officer and State Printer. That's basically a percentage of the total value of the work order, so it's driven by the cost of the jobs.
Okay.
And with respect to the funding strategy, you know, that's one of the policy issues, I think, that has to be discussed there. We have a series of internal charges for services that are provided centrally, and that's typically what gets approved through the Ways and Means process. Whether that gets funded generally or funded through a fee-for-service or some other mechanism is something that we obviously work with the legislature on, so that would be an interesting discussion to have. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll be interested to find out what Committee Administrator Mr. Keller finds out in that regard. That will be important.
Okay. Great. So, Jim, if you would prepare everything and ask fiscal if there's a fiscal on it, and then we can move the bill next Tuesday.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2474. I'm going to open an informational meeting on the Oregon assessment system, and now it's ladies and gentlemen. You have a, proposed report before you that we have, I have worked on quite extensively to put together. It basically, so let me just kind of go through a couple of things on it. One is that it gives a summary of the testimony that we heard on February 24th in our joint meeting with the Education Committee in Portland. Excuse me. And some of the testimony that we heard, testimony that related to the hard costs and the soft costs. We also got some additional information from Mr. Costi over at the Department of Education. Then on March 1st, we had there was some additional testimony, particularly from the Department of Education, as well as from the folks at the Confederation of School Administrators and the Oregon School Boards Association with regards to hard costs and soft costs and that sort of thing. I think that this has taken a pretty good look at the costs associated with the assessment system. One of the things that we also learned in that was that the department is actually looking at putting out an RFP, a request for proposals from vendors of assessment systems that would utilize then a nationally normed assessment tool that would be already known to be statistically valid. As the report points out in our findings, that the fact that the math performance tests had to be jettisoned because they were found to be invalid is really something that I think points to some of the things in my opinion with regards to the assessment system in general, in that it has never reached the point of being able to allow us to really compare Oregon students with students from around the country, because there are no national norms for the assessment tools that we are currently using. When you look at the hard costs, let me go back to costs for just a second here. But when you look at the hard costs that we put together, and you look at the exhibits on the back, we have come up with almost $60 million of biennium that we can identify as being dollars that are spent on the assessment system. And testimony gave us information about was the fact that people don't see the value in this system. The hard costs, we know that there's $8 million of biennium, and that's just for the state education department. We know that through testimony that we got, that schools, there are high schools, many of them, you know, most of the high schools closed for at least a day, and we know that the cost, that's a $7 million cost when we look at the amount of money that it costs to run all of the state's high schools for one day in Oregon. And that, to me, you know, when you have your staff there, but you don't have students there, that to me says that there's because you're still paying the $7 million to keep the school open. That's a lost opportunity, I think, for learning as opposed to just figuring out what's going on with the SIM and the CAM. So I think we've identified a lot of costs that are involved with the SIM and the CAM. I think this committee did what we set out to do, which was to identify what those are, and then make a recommendation to the House Education Committee as far as the policy implications that they can take up, and also for the Joint Ways and Means Committee in terms of looking at the funding and what they can take up, and how some of the resources that we're putting into this could actually be reallocated into the classroom. And I think our schools, as they're looking for more money all the time, this is a way of I think finding some savings for them that can be then utilized or redirected so that it's not being spent on assessments in SIM and CAM, but rather on more educational opportunities. Real quickly, the recommendations that this report makes is to amend the relevant statutes to eliminate the requirements for the performance assessments. I think we've already talked about that they were found to be invalid. Amend the relevant statutes to eliminate the certificate of initial mastery and the certificate of advanced mastery, the SIM and the CAM. I don't think there would be anything that would keep a school district from being able to utilize the SIM and the CAM in their own district if they wanted to, but on a statewide system, what we found, what we see is that this system is 14 years old and has not been found to be valid. There are no institutions in the state of higher education that utilize it and ask for it. There's none across the country. There are no employers that ask about the SIM or the CAM. What both institutions, employers as well as institutions of higher learning want to know is what a kid's GPA is, what a student's attendance record is, how they did on the SAT, and those are the things that they look at, their writing abilities, and then they decide whether to admit them or not. We would also encourage the Oregon Department of Education and the school and the local school district to focus more on aligning the assessment requirements and activities to the No Child Left Behind. I realize that No Child Left Behind came sort of a little later to the party from a standpoint of being implemented or passed in 2001 after our system had been passed in 1991, so there's a 10-year difference, but I think that since it's the federal mandate, we might as well start aligning ourselves with it. Another fourth recommendation is to instruct the Department of Education to contract with an independent educational assessment organization. So assessments don't go away completely, but to implement a standards-based, objectively scored, value-added assessment system to meet all requirements of the Federal No Child Left Behind Act. And then fifth, to instruct the Department of Education to ensure that the database initiative project is better able to capture all of the costs of administering, testing, reporting, and analysis of student assessment data, and to provide training to the school districts on the proper coding and practices and use of that. One of the things that we found when we got a copy of the database initiative from the OSBA is that function code 2230 is what relates to assessments and SIM and CAM. 83 school districts are reporting zero amount of money spent in function code 2230. And we know that absolutely can't be. Not when you have 115 that are reporting costs. And we have some districts like some of our smaller districts out in Eastern Oregon, like Adrian, for example, that has done a very good job of putting together all of the costs that it shows. And when we see that a small school district is spending $135,000 a year that could be better redirected, then I think it's time for the legislature to act to relieve the school districts of this mandate. So let me stop there and open up the floor for our members.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. I found the public meeting in Portland to be most instructional, and was genuinely, I guess, shocked when I heard teachers and school administrators come forward and tell us the plan isn't working, that it is slowing down the process. And I guess I'd never heard that from my district before, that this was new information. I do know that my administrators have asked for relief from this and other mandates, at least for a time. And so I guess to hear it in a public setting of this nature was very disconcerting to me. I know that it is, it takes a lot of time away from the classroom, away from the teaching of the students. I've had some excellent communications back and forth with my education service districts and my superintendents back in my district over the past couple of weeks. And again, they're saying, you choose from the mandates, but here's seven pages of mandates that need to be reexamined, and this appears to be a mandate which, as you have indicated, and which we heard from the students and industry themselves, they said this is what you're doing in the schools to teach to a test with regard to that particular issue is not a valid use of your time and energy and resources. So, and then to have discovered that the department itself was in fact considering the move to a contract for nationally normed assessment system basically lets us know that the Oregon system, which has been in place for a long time, that has cost us a lot of money, might be better served if we did seek out the nationally normed assessment system and use our resources there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelder?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate, first of all, and commend you for the work that you've done on this report, especially the analysis at the end. I think was really valuable, the exhibits 1 through, I think it is 5. As we discussed yesterday, I have some concerns about some of the recommendations, and based on conversations with my own school districts and during the interim, I spent a lot of time visiting my schools. I would say that especially for recommendations 1 and 2, I would have a hard time supporting because I haven't heard that directly from my school districts and my administrators, teachers, parents. Not to say that there aren't concerns about SIM and CAM, that there aren't concerns about alignments of requirements with No Child Left Behind, you know, with the different assessments. Certainly I've been hearing that, but I think personally I feel it's a little premature for me to sign on to a report where I haven't heard from all the districts in the state. Obviously the two hearings we have are very informative. One recommendation possibly to add would be to spend more time out in the districts asking teachers, administrators, parents, and you know that might be a charge for the education committee possibly. But so I felt a little uncomfortable with 1 and 2 since it says, you know, amend the statutes to eliminate the requirement for performance assessments, and the other number 2, which says amend the statutes to eliminate SIM and CAM. I certainly support 3 as far as making sure that we are not duplicating efforts, that we're using our resources efficiently, especially since we have on top of the SIM and CAM the No Child Left Behind, and maybe there's a better way to align the two programs so they're not duplicative. Certainly 4, I don't have a problem with that, especially if it's going to save us money, and again if there's a good evaluation tool out there that we could already adopt. And 5, I had no problem with that. So it's really just the first and second recommendation, and I guess that's based on the findings. 1 and 2, those were the two, again, and 3. 1, 2, and 3, I would have to hear more information from other districts throughout the state because I can't say definitively, you know, that all citizens in Oregon. So just as far as my comfort level, and I don't know how you want to proceed with this, if you want to, you know, I don't really think this warrants a minority report, but I just wanted it to be on the record that I really appreciate the work you've done. But I have issue with a few of the recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, appreciate the work that has gone into this report, which I think has been considerable, but I do concur in the comments that Representative Dingfelder just made. I think that I've certainly heard criticisms of SIM and CAM, but I'm not really prepared to recommend throwing out the entire system just based on the evidence before us, and so I would also not want to be shown as concurring in the entire report.
Okay. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too want to join the rest of the committee and commend you for compiling this report. You obviously have done a great deal of work in putting it together, you and your staff. You know, I have in my house district, I have five separate school districts, and they run the gamut all the way from the small school district of around 150 people up to a school district over 6,000 students, and so I've got the whole range. And one thing over the years in visiting my schools that I continually heard from the teachers was their concern with SIM and CAM and the time it took from them to be able to instruct within their classroom. And some of these teachers, and this is at the grassroots level, I think we're really get the feeling for what the value of the SIM and CAM. These teachers made it very plain that they were unhappy with the system. And so I have no problem in supporting what you said, what was said in the report.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to point out a couple of things that came to mind. Representative Dingfelder, you mentioned that you weren't comfortable with recommendation number one on the performance assessments, and what I would like to make sure that I point out is that we're not recommending that the knowledge and skills assessments be eliminated. And I think that's, you know, there's a real difference there. And what was found to really be deficient in the in those assessments was the performance-based assessments, which, you know, I think it's probably, you're probably thinking, well, it's odd to hear Crummell talking about getting rid of performance measures, because that's what I've sort of built my legislative career on. But at the same time, I think the knowledge and skills based assessments, there are a number of tools that are already out there that do have the national norms. It does give us an ability then to compare students in Oregon with other states to so that we can see how we are doing in a lot of areas, and particularly in math, science, and that sort of thing. The other thing that I just have to say, I can't help myself, being a substitute teacher, it's real interesting to be sort of have the opportunity to be the fly on the wall. Because the number of teachers that know that I'm a state legislator is, I can count on less than one hand. And the number of times that I've been recognized as a state legislator when I've gone into a school as a substitute, I can count on less than one hand. But it's so it's interesting to sit in the teachers' lounge or the lunchroom and listen to the teachers at noon talking about the SIM and the CAM, the assessments, and what they're doing. And they don't see the value in it. And I think if the OEA continues to support the SIM and the CAM, they're not necessarily doing what their members really want, because I can tell you what I hear as a proverbial fly on the wall is that they would, the teachers would really see the value in eliminating the SIM and the CAM. They do see the value in assessments, and they think that is an important thing to have in our educational system, but they don't see the value in the way that the state of Oregon has gone about it. And I think, you know, it is time that we sort of cut this thing loose and try going a little bit different direction, especially since it hasn't panned out the way that we had the way it was originally intended, and it hasn't been embraced by institutions of higher education and employers. With that, then, if there are no other comments, What I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and formalize this a little bit because we do have some concern and dissent on the committee. So what I'm going to do is I'd like the chair will make a motion that the report as presented be forwarded to the House Committee on Education and the Joint Ways and Means Committee with regards to the Oregon Assessment System. And
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
Just by way of comment relative to the concerns that have been expressed today, I think I heard the dissenting members concerned about the fact that they hadn't heard from a lot of schools and perhaps the broad spectrum of the schools that reported to us on our field day in Portland before the joint committees of House Education and House Audits may have been more instructional. But as I understand your first recommendation that the relevant statutes eliminate the performance assessments, that's Oregon, as to Oregon's current performance assessment program, not to eliminate the assessments as to knowledge and skills.
That's correct.
Yes, and in that regard, I would wholeheartedly support perhaps a clarification, and maybe that would allay some of the concerns that have been expressed by committee members.
In a final report that goes to the, I can add a sentence relative to that if that would be the desire of the committee.
I think that does speak to exactly what Representative Kingfeller's concern was, that it looks like we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, mm-hmm. and that wasn't your intention, as you
right.
expressed, Mr. Chair.
Well, and Mr. Chair, just to follow up to that on the second one, that's the one probably that I take most issue with, just because I feel like we need more information before making that recommendation. So I don't know if you want to say, you know, there was not consensus among the committee on the second one, or that there was a recommendation to expand the hearing process to, you know, include school districts around the state. And that would be up to the Education Committee, obviously, if they wanted to follow up on that. That's just a couple of suggestions.
Okay. So what you would... suggestion is along with that statement something that to the effect of the Education Committee may want to do further field hearings.
Yeah, I certainly would encourage them to hear a broader cross section. There's 198 school districts. Maybe even doing a survey, which could be easily done over the internet. You know, of parents, PTA, school districts, school boards. And I haven't even had a chance to talk to OSBA about this, actually,
mm-hmm.
as well. So, I mean, I just don't feel like I have enough information. Maybe I tend to be a very analytical person. I like to have a lot of information before I make decisions. But I just didn't feel comfortable, especially with that second one, without having more information first.
Yeah, I think that my own personal feeling is that I think somebody needs to sort of take a stand on this, and I think based on the information that we have, I don't have any reservations making that making the recommendation. Understanding, of course, that the Education Committee can do whatever they want. I can add a line that says the Education Committee is encouraged to seek further input from districts, but I think that I would prefer to stand with the recommendation that it be able, that the SIM and the CAM be eliminated.
Mr. Chair, let me ask and I appreciate the discussion about again to see if we can find some common ground on all five items with the dissent at this particular point. Maybe if we ask this question in the more positive vein, have members of the committee actually spoken to schools, their schools, or other schools and school teachers and administrators in the state of Oregon at any length wherein those school administrators and teachers feel like that the certificates of initial mastery and the certificates of advanced mastery are the best way for us to use our resources? Have teachers within your districts and within your acquaintance come forward and said, you know, this is a good place for us to use our money, and if we had more money, we'd want to stick it right into this location. I think if they're telling you that, I think that should probably come out. We've got school teachers that say that if we had additional resources, we would want to stick them here, as opposed to in other places. And that might give us a different feel for it. And I haven't heard that. I've heard that if we had the first dime we would have would go into other kinds of things, not ever towards the SIM or the CAM.
Well, and Representative Crummell and I had this discussion yesterday. I just happened to meet on Friday by coincidence with two school districts, one in Representative Merkley's district, one in mine, and we had a conversation about this because of this ongoing discussion. And I didn't phrase it that if you had additional money, but it was, you know, what are your feelings about the SIM and CAM? How is it working in your districts? And they were actually supportive. So that's why I'm having a hard time signing on. Now, this may not be indicative of most of the school districts, Ms. Phillips knows that there's some interesting situations going on in these school districts. So that's why I'm having a little bit of, heartburn signing off on this. However, I don't know if this is unique to those school districts or not, without having the experience that some of you have. I've never sat on the education committee. I haven't talked to, as I mentioned, the OSBA about this yet, because I'd actually be more interested personally to hear what the school boards also think as well, in addition to the administrators and the teachers.
You'd have fit right in with the Wilson High School seniors. It would have been great. You and Kelly out there and with cheerleader outfits and pom-poms.
I was never a cheerleader. I just want to set the record straight on that. But anyway, so that...
You would have fit right in.
So that's the issue. I mean, it is interesting that I just had this conversation, and Ms. Phillips knows because she knows the school districts well. So, that was how it was phrased. I'm sure if I had said if there was additional money, then I might have gotten another answer. But the reality is they are getting money now and utilizing that program, and it's working well for them. So I would have to go back to them and re-ask that question.
Mm-hmm. Is that, Mr. Chair, if I may, is that something that you could do? Are these
certainly
accessible?
Oh, absolutely.
I think particularly in business representative Dingfelder, when we're looking at the expanding the marginal dollar that we can make off of a project, or when we get hit in an industry where I can't make as much money off of this kinds of French fries or this package of this size of French fries or of this size of tater tots, something like that. When we have to make that decision, if I had an extra X dollars and could use it in any way, would I expand this production line? Or would I expand some other production line, which will give me better results? And I think that's a good way to approach that. In converse fashion, if my plant was taking a X number of dollar budget cut, and I had to diminish something, which of the mandates would I first go to? And I think in both instances, those questions came across in this public meeting, and as I have ask amongst my district folks that the SIM and CAM are not areas where they would ever expand, and that they would certainly be amongst the areas that could be considered mandates which would be cut.
Well, and I visited and I talked to Representative Crummell about this. I have about 25 schools in my district. I have both Portland Public Schools, which of course is the biggest and most diverse district in the state. And I got a different answer almost from every school, middle school, high school person that I talked to. I will say one of the biggest concerns that was raised with everybody I spoke to was No Child Left Behind and the huge impact that's going to have on especially some of my Title I schools that are having some challenges meeting their annual yearly progress. So I actually heard a lot more about No Child Left Behind. And part of it is I think it's a more recent, it's another layer that's put on. I mean, I think, if anything, expanding the discussion to talk about, and we do get to that in a way in number three, but all of the different mandates and, having a comprehensive look at how we deal with it in the state that will make it easier for administrators and for teachers and for parents to wade through sort of the bureaucratic maze that we've created in trying to educate our kids. I think that is something I wholeheartedly agree with. And I actually heard a lot of concern about No Child Left Behind and making sure that these schools that were working really hard were not going to be painted as failing because they weren't meeting certain benchmarks. And I certainly have, as I'm sure you do, some populations that are very challenged, a lot of ESL or ELL learners, and kids that are coming from homes where parents are working three jobs and they're moving three times a year. So there's some huge challenges that I want to make sure our schools can overcome, and so I'm not trying to be problematic. I'm just trying to make sure that we get a comprehensive view at some of the requirements that we're placing on our schools.
Mr. Chair, I think those are valid observations. Representative Dingfelder's experience is they're valid experiences. She's experienced a different reaction from the larger districts than perhaps what we may be experiencing in some of the smaller districts. And while that may not be a uniform voice, it is certainly a different voice than we heard when we asked the public to come forward with the kinds of issues that they were concerned about. So I just want to make sure that you understand, Representative Dingfelder, that you're listening to your constituents, and you do a good job of that, and that your concerns are valid based upon the information that you're receiving back from them.
Yes, I appreciate that input quite a bit, and maybe one of the things we have to do is add another recommendation, which is that the education committee look at eliminating all of the mandates.
I hate mandates anyway, and
what we ought to be doing is saying define what constitutes a high school diploma, proficiencies in certain areas, and then we as a state get the heck out of the way and let the school districts do their job.
Mr. Chair, perhaps in that regard, again, with the amplification, not to change the recommendation, but with the amplification of item number two, the preamble could be, along with other mandated services, legislatively mandated services, consider amending the relevant statutes too, and continuing on with that. So those are some additional language that you might consider based upon the observations that have been made by our colleagues.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the discussion. Are there any other comments, Representative Butler, or excuse me, Representative Rosenbaum or Brown?
No.
Okay. Then my assumption then is that there are still two dissenting. I'll add the clarification on number one, I may put something in on with regards to number two, as has been suggested in our discussion here, in terms of taking a look at other state imposed mandates. But the report will be sent out with a 3-2 showing two dissenting opinions of the report going to the chairs of House Education and the Joint Ways and Means Committees, substantially as it is. Okay. Any other comments before we close? Then I'll close the informational meeting on the Oregon Assessment System, and we will. Hey, look at this. We finished an hour early, so we will stand adjourned until Thursday. See you then.
Thank you.